Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
So let me tell you how my friend Jan found the Unitarian Church as a 10-year-old in the 1950s. It was the 1950s. Jan's father had died, and she and her mother and younger sister had just moved into the Bromley Heath Housing Project in the Jamaica Plain section of Boston. Her mother worked in a hospital and had to work most weekends. Mom was a Methodist, and on Sunday morning before going to work at the hospital, she told Jan to take her sister and to go to the Methodist church for Sunday school. They walked up Center Street, and before they got to the Methodist church Sunday school, they found the first church in Jamaica Plain, Unitarian, on the green. It was an imposing building. They went in to check it out. They liked it, especially the juice and cookies after Sunday school. So they kept going back. And their mother, pleased that her daughters wanted to go to Sunday school, didn't ask too many questions. Until Palm Sunday. Before leaving for work, Mom said to Jan and her sister, "Be sure to bring home some palms for me." Well, by now they had figured out that this was not like the Methodist Church, and there would likely be no palms on Palm Sunday, and there were none. On the way home, they figured out what to say to Mom when she asked for her palms. So Mom got home from work. "Did you get my palms?" Jan explained, "They didn't have any palms. It's a very poor church, and they couldn't afford to buy any palms." Mom was astonished. Now, of course, the week after Palm Sunday comes Easter, and Mom was able to get Easter Sunday off from work. Now, this being the late 1950s, it did not matter how poor you were, you got a new outfit for Christmas. For Easter. Thank you, it was Easter. You probably got one for Christmas too, for Easter. And dressed up in it and went to church in your best clothes. So the next week, Jan and her mom and sister were all dressed up. They walked to the square and entered the church. And they were the only people in the church all dressed up. Now, as Jan told the story, there were, of course, this being a Unitarian church, professors and social workers and teachers and people like that who came on Sunday dressed up for any day off, including Easter. And looking around at how not dressed up everyone was for Easter, Mom said, "You're right, this church really is poor." Now, Jan would later be married in First Church. Still later, she would manage a soup kitchen at another Unitarian Universalist church in Boston. And although she is not a regular church attender these days, she is still deeply connected with this. It still all matters to her. Her mom, however, would always be a Methodist. And when Mom died, Jan, always the oldest sister, arranged to have the minister of the Methodist church her mom attended in her old age conduct the funeral service. Well, I heard this story after not seeing Jan for about 10 years, and I was visiting her in her home then in Brockton, Massachusetts, south of Boston, in the early 1990s. I had that morning been the guest preacher at the Universalist Unitarian Church in Brockton. And we reminisced about working together at the Bunker Hill Health Center in Charlestown, Massachusetts, in the early 1970s, when we were both still in our 20s and still married to our first spouses. And we had not at that point seen each other for at least 10 years, and we got caught up on happenings that we had not covered in an ongoing correspondence. And this was long before email and Facebook, and we were both letter writers, but that still doesn't mean we covered everything. And I became acquainted with her current spouse and some of the children and grandchildren that came with that relationship. And visiting that weekend were two of Jan's friends from New York City, people I had never met. And these also went back many years in Jan's life, one to a trip to Cuba, on a trip to Cuba 20 years earlier. And coincidentally, one of these friends named Naomi worked at the Gouverneur Hospital in Manhattan's Lower East Side, across the street from a tenement which I had renovated to be permanent housing for homeless families in the 1990s, when I worked for It's Time Incorporated, an organization that Naomi knew from her work as a social worker in that neighborhood around the hospital. Small world, isn't it? Small, but grand. In his poem, God's Grandeur, Gerard Manley Hopkins speaks of the dearest freshness deep down things, by which he means nature and God in nature. At this time of year in the northern cities and suburbs where I have lived most of my life, the crocuses have popped up and the dwarf pear trees that line many streets are covered with their small white blossoms. I have the same feeling that Hopkins expresses, that even in these times, for all that we have done to the earth, for all this, he says, nature is never spent. But I also felt that when seeing my old friend sitting in a modest living room in Brockton, the old industrial city south of Boston, there lives the dearest freshness deep down things. Now, Gerard Manley Hopkins had a way of putting words together that can catch your breath with their beauty and with the juxtaposition of the ideas expressed in the words and the use of sometimes obscure and archaic words and some punctuation that I've never seen used that way anywhere else. He had converted from the Church of England, High Church Anglicanism, to Roman Catholicism, and become a Jesuit priest. He expressed a most orthodox theology in a most unorthodox manner. In a most unorthodox manner that allows me to appreciate a theology that I rejected long ago. In fact, I can read this poem and step outside of Hopkins' Catholicism. I can read the divine imagery as metaphor, though Hopkins no doubt meant it literally. It can convey a sense of the wellness of the world, even as nature is used and brutally used, but not used up. And for all this, he writes, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. However peculiar this arrangement of words, and whatever his explanation, I am with him in the sense of wonder, of renewal, of everlasting possibility in nature. Now, I had the good fortune of first reading Hopkins in a junior high school English class with a teacher who was a Unitarian. There's no theological discussion or argument. This was a public school, after all. But there was a grammatical analysis as a path to understanding poetry. Poetry isn't that difficult, said old Mrs. D. And she gave us another one of Hopkins' sonnets titled The Windhover. This is the first sentence of this poem. It takes 6.5 of the 14 lines. I caught this morning morning's minion, kingdom of daylight's dauphin, Doppel-drawn dawn falcon in his riding of the rolling level underneath him steady air, and striding high there, how he rung upon the rein of a wimpling wing in his ecstasy. Then off forth on a swing, as a skate's heel sweeps smooth on a bow bend, the hurl and gliding rebuffed the big wind. That's one sentence. An old Mrs. D said, poetry is just regular English written a little differently, and had us diagram that sentence. It was a challenge. It's just ordinary English written differently. Well, yes and no. The short sentence that follows is really stunning and much more accessible. My heart in hiding stirred for a bird, the achieve of, the mastery of the thing. Well, is it not just amazing when someone creates such a thing of beauty that you can overlook your intellectual and theological disagreements and accept and enjoy the beauty and the truth that you can still find there? Like the dearest freshness deep down things. Whatever the specifics of a person's personal beliefs, each of us on a religious quest reaches for these. The dearest freshness deep down things are the stuff of religion. As I reread Hopkins more than 50 years after being introduced to his poetry, I am again struck by the utter sensuality of the language. He may have been a mystic writing mystical poetry, but his mysticism is as much of the world of nature as of God, a being out there. Yet he cannot in his theology completely separate God's perfection and the world's imperfections. God for Hopkins is the creator and protector, but neither can he identify the two. Hopkins was not a transcendentalist. Yet for Hopkins, it is finally in nature where these things live, the dearest freshness deep down things. And for me, they live in nature and in human nature. And what might they be? They are the world of nature itself, wonderful to behold, seemingly unlimited in its bounty. Yet our taking of its bounty damages it without destroying it. There was still much wilderness in the 1800s when Hopkins wrote, even if the cities were crowded and dirty and smoky. But today we can realistically imagine the disappearance of all wilderness. Smoke and oil polluted the early industrial cities that Hopkins knew. In the 21st century, the damage to the ozone layer and other factors have led to global climate change. We learn even more and more about the natural world as we exterminate it, as we drive numerous species to extinction. And we wonder, is it possible that nature can be exhausted? But this does not make me lose my sense of awe and connection with nature. 2 years ago or more, a little more than 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when I was at Clearwater, Florida, the Reverend Kathleen Korb of St. Petersburg and I were driving together to Port Charlotte for the installation of the Port Charlotte UU congregation's new minister. And Katie, who'd grown up in St. Petersburg, said, "Watch for the Braden River. It's what Florida rivers are supposed to be." I didn't see the Braden River. So on the trip back, I said, "I didn't see the Braden River." She says, "Well, that's because it's what it's supposed to be. Nothing's been cut down on it. It's not been developed. The highway just cuts through and goes over it." So this time I slowed down as we got to that bridge. And yes, unlike every other body of water I'd seen in Florida, the Braden River had lush vegetation, uncut vegetation, growing right down to the edge of the water. And although it was a quick view out the car window as driving, I could see what Katie meant by that. Some years ago, when I lived briefly in Long Branch on the Jersey Shore, I walked over, as was my custom in the evening, to the boardwalk at sunset. The full moon had risen over the ocean to the east. And I looked back over my shoulder at the sun as it was coming down lower and lower over the buildings of that small city. I looked at the sun and I followed the sky to where the sun's light struck the moon. And then the reflection of the light of the moon just rising over the horizon of the Atlantic Ocean, reflecting a beam of light through the waves to the water at my feet, a white rippling band of light in the water to my feet, and felt that complete connection, that circle of nature and life, even in that built up, battered piece of the Jersey Shore. Nature is never spent, even in the city. The Unitarian Universalist and songwriter Malvino Reynolds wrote a song years ago called God Bless the Grass, about how the grass grows up through cracks in concrete and enlarges them. But that puts the building we do utterly against nature. And I do not want to do that, because the reality that we build is part of our human nature, which is part of nature as such. What and how we build, how much we waste of wilderness, and how we heal the earth even as of necessity when we cut into it, and how humanely we build, these too are part of the deepest freshness, deep down things. For me, that phrase represents a state of mind and spirit, a way of being in the world, with the natural world and with our fellow human beings. It is a state of mind and spirit experienced when holding a newborn baby and feeling nothing but life, when feeling at one with nature, when falling in love, when grieving a death, when fighting an injustice side by side with others. It is what we seek in a religious community, is what we seek in our religious quest, to feel one with nature, to know God, to be in loving solidarity with our fellow human beings, to feel love and to feel hurt honest and fully, to celebrate life not as a party, but as a gift of infinite worth. To feel one with another in the great endeavor of nurturing the human spirit, which is at the heart of what we call ministry. In Unitarian Universalism, we do this in many ways, and long have we done it in many ways. A few years after Jan and her sisters figured out there weren't going to be any palms at First Church in Jamaica Plain, my wife, Jody Light, then a child in New York City, received palms at a Unitarian church there. And they still give them out on Palm Sunday at the Unitarian Church in Brooklyn Heights. We do it all in different ways. When my friend Jan was young, her mother had sent her to the church to find the religion that her mother had known. This was not what Jan and her sister found. But what they found were good, and their loving mother was wise enough to see that it was good. And although she would keep her Methodist faith that she got in her upbringing for the rest of her life, she could respect the choices of her young daughters as they shaped their own lives of meaning. So there is no single place or circumstance or theology of the dearest freshness deep down things. And that's why the poem of a Jesuit can speak to this Unitarian Universalist humanist, and I hope to you as well. Now, what Gerard Manley Hopkins called God's grandeur, the humanist poet John Ciardi praised without a name in his poem Snowy Heron. Neither poet doubted that there was something in the world larger than ourselves that was worthy of praise. Wrote Ciardi, Saint Francis, being happiest on his knees, would have cried, Father, cry anything you please, but praise by any name or none, and doubt all else but praise. So what we seek is what many would call the spirit of life. For some, this is another name for God. For others, something equally vivid but different. For still others, something just impossible to explain. But there lives the deepest freshness deep down things. For what we seek and find, whatever we know, whatever we doubt, for all these things, let us give praise. Amen. Blessed be.